This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. It is roundtable time, talking about Michigan in the Sweet 16. The Wolverines knocked off Tennessee. My esteemed colleagues from MGO Blog, I cannot remember if any of them picked Tennessee in this matchup. You know, if they have, because I think the entire crew had Michigan advancing past Colorado State. But did any of you have the Wolverines beating Tennessee? Let me introduce the crew. Starting off first with the man that started it all, MGO Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, how are you?
Good. I didn't predict Michigan would beat Tennessee, but that's just because I always predict whatever the KenPom line is.
All right. Seth Fisher, the number two at MGO Blog. Did you pick Tennessee?
No, they surprised me because I've been sticking by the every other plan. And that has done me really well for like the entire month of March and February. So, no, I picked Tennessee because Michigan won the previous game, and I could see a pattern, and I knew what to pick. But now that they can win two in a row, maybe they can win three in a row, four in a row, five in a row, six.
All right. And Craig Ross, do we have Craig Ross? No Craig Ross. No Craig Ross. He's here in spirit. Like, the folks who are on our video feed can see him. They just can't hear him.
Perfect. It's perfect.
Let it out, Craig. If you have to express with hand signals, it's perfectly fine. Just make sure you censor just that one finger. That's all.
But let's rewind the tape, guys, to last week, right? The Colorado State game. And I was, to me, watching the first half, I wasn't surprised by Michigan struggling offensively in that game. That's what this team is going to do at times. They're going to be droughts. To me, I was critical of the defensive performance, the open looks from three that they gave up in that contest. And then they made some adjustments. You heard Phil talk about making a subtle adjustment with Hunter on ball pressure. They didn't give so much open airspace on the perimeter anymore. And the Frankie Collins factor loomed really, really big in that game, Brian. It was an outstanding performance for Frankie in that game.
Yeah, performance of his Michigan career so far. Not only did he put up 14 on 7 shooting possessions, he also really got in and bothered Isaiah Stevens, who's the second best player on Colorado State. He was 1 of 7 from 2. He had 4 assists, no turnovers, but he fouled out in 29 minutes. So his ability to stay in front of him, I think, really kind of hampered anything that they had going on the interior. And then once Deshaun Thomas wasn't open for 3 after 3 after 3, they really didn't have a whole lot else to turn to, because Musa Diabate did a really good job on David Roddy. And Roddy was decently efficient, but he wasn't like a 30% usage guy like he usually is. He was a 20% usage guy. So without Stevens and Roddy really doing anything, they had to turn to other guys on the team. And except for Thomas, nobody could really step up.
Mm-hmm. I felt like Seth, certainly Frankie was a major catalyst on both ends. Frankly, Frankie was a catalyst that they're down 15. He gets an and one. He comes back on the other side, picks Roddy's pocket. And gets a dunk off of that. That seemed to sort of spark Michigan, but the defensive end, the energy, the adjustment, the execution of the plan as they came on the second half. I want to say by the first TV timeout, they had outscored them 7-2, and it just really felt like all the momentum has shifted in Michigan's direction.
Oh, Corey. I mean, the whole game shifted when Frankie had his, you know, one-man, five-point run, right? Like, that changed that whole nature. But, you know, I kind of felt like Colorado State was hitting their shots. I want to give Nico Medved credit because I thought that their game plan against Michigan was fantastic. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot of the same thing with Villanova, where both forwards kind of pop out at the same time, and that just clears all that space and forces a switch for Hunter Dickinson. And what kept on happening is Dickinson would end up matched up against a guard, and, you know, that's just not going to go well. And they would get those open threes out. Michigan managed to adjust to that and clean that up, and the way that I thought they adjusted to it was just have Frankie handle both sides of a screen and trusted him to be able to get over there. And like Brian mentioned, like they were rolling those plays to get Isaiah Stevens a clean shot, and he couldn't. Frankie would just beat him to the spot. And it was that plus, you know, a little bit of offense from him, that is what we're looking for from Frankie, right? Like that opens up the whole world of this is the next Xavier Simpson. Never going to be a shooter, but that is a very effective point guard for Michigan. And
hey, he hit a three in this game.
He hit a three. It's, bonus. It's
the hope is still there for me.
That got him up to what? 17%. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I was as we move on to the Tennessee game. You know, the guy who was infuriating to me. It wasn't Stevens, and the guy that they seemed to lose in the scout was their big Deshaun Thomas. That ugly shot he kept putting up. And so they just kept getting, they kept leaving him open, not extending enough on him. Make that dude put it on the deck. I mean, you know, don't give him an open look. And he had those threes he got clamped down on later in the game. And I thought the big, whether it was Musa or mainly Hunter, they were getting taken advantage of, and not so much after Phil and Juwan and company, Phil, Saadi, after they made an adjustment on the defensive end. The guys on the floor made an adjustment energy-wise, as the energy was much better. It's funny how that works, how that helps fuel your offense. Now, my concern was different in the Tennessee game, fellas. I felt like that was a team you couldn't extend on. Like, you cannot get your bigs, or frankly, anyone other than Frankie Collins, caught on the perimeter crowding their guards. You will get exposed. Happened a few times, but not as often as Tennessee needed it to happen in order to win that game, Brian.
Yeah, and Michigan funneled a lot of stuff into mid-range jumpers, which Tennessee is in like the 300s at making this year, and they made a lot of those. And on the flip side, they gave Josiah Jordan-James, who's like a 32% three-point shooter, six pretty good open looks, and he made zero of them. So, you know, I think the luck came fairly close to evening out because they were making shots that they generally don't make, but they're 2 of 18 from three, which is not great. You know, I mean, to me, this was the Eli Brooks game, and he's played more games than I think anybody in the history of Michigan basketball. He's always been kind of, you know, the third wheel on a good team. And here he puts up 23. He hits a couple of threes, and then he puts the game to bed with a Xavier Simpson running skyhook. Which I mean, that hit me in the feels, because we didn't get to see that, right? We didn't get to see fully actualized Xavier Simpson skyhook in the tourney, because that was the COVID tourney. And for that to come back to secure a place in the Sweet 16 was like, you know, yeah, that's why I do sports.
Hey man, their stars, the team leaders did what they were supposed to. You're right, Eli Brooks. If you had told me before the game that he was going to be the top guard performer in this game, because in the final analysis, he outplayed Kennedy Chandler. I said, man, wow, they're going to win this game. They're going to win this game. Now, could I have predicted that was going to happen? No, but I guess I had never described him as a bucket getter, as a guy you give the ball to and say, go get it, Seth. But that's exactly what he did. In this game, extremely efficient game and a clutch game for Eli Brooks last Saturday against Tennessee.
Oh, and they needed it, man. Like, you know, Tennessee, they really abused us when they put both those guards out there at the same time. Michigan just did not have the speed to keep up with Kai Ziegler and Kenny Chandler at the same time. I mean, those guys are legit athletes. And you know, when we had Frankie out there, he could deal with one of them, and then the other one would fall to Eli. So, I mean, he, you gave him a lot to handle on the defensive end, and then also expected him to be in charge of the offense. You noticed late on, late in that game, they didn't want to go to have Frankie running the offense. I know he had a couple turnovers at that point, but he was not having the game offensively that he had against Colorado State.
And well, I mean, I thought that was free throws. So Michigan's got a narrow lead. I think Michigan is in the 1-1. You can't really have a guy who's shooting, what, 40% on free throws running the offense at that point.
Right, right. Yeah. But, I mean, that goes back to, you know, who's going to step up? And that's been a question for Michigan all year. You know, at Nebraska, like all sorts of times, you can think of times when Michigan was in trouble because something wasn't working, right? Moose is having a bad game, or Caleb Houston's not hitting his outside shots, which was another problem in this game, right? And whenever they've needed somebody to step up for this team, it's always Eli Brooks. Okay, one time it was Devontae Jones. The rest of the time, it's just been Eli Brooks.
Yeah. All right. So I, you know, we should talk about Frankie's game here because, like, he doesn't have much of a box score line here, but I think that is obscuring how well he played in this game because he one of his misses was a Kobe assist to Dickinson for free throws, and he kicked it out to Houston for three wide open catch and shoot threes, none of which went down. He, you know, he was really good defensively, and he was able to break the Tennessee ball pressure. So even though that might not have resulted in an assist or anything that shows up in the box score, this is a team that gets in your face and absolutely devastates people with their steals. And they had seven in this game, but after a few possessions, it was pretty clear that the ball pressure on Collins just wasn't going to work. And so they kind of sat back. So despite the box score, I thought Frankie had another really encouraging performance.
My guy, Brian Cook. See, you didn't just watch the game, you see the game. Absolutely, absolutely right. I said the same thing, that this is one of the people who are just looking at his box score and they're like, you know, he was okay. I thought, to your point, Seth, he was really, I had him down for getting blown by one time in that game, once, which considering the speed in that backcourt is huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge. That was going to be the issue. Could they break you down with penetration? Could you force them to be jump shooting guards? Now, Kennedy Chandler got into the lane a little bit more than you would want him to, but like you said, Seth, Frankie can only guard one of them, right?
Right.
He had some success getting in the lane, but Eli was able to offset that with his offense. The guy Ziegler did nothing in this game, and both guys combined did nothing from the perimeter. I think they hit 1-3. Between them. So I thought Frankie's game was really good, but you also got an unsung performance. And we got to talk about Terrence Williams, man.
Oh, yes.
Because I said, you know, you pointed out at halftime, look, you look at Hunter, he's obviously on from the perimeter, but three of his first four buckets in the first half were from the perimeter. You know they're going to work him in the post. They did. Said, hey, we need to see more Frankie, because Frankie is the only guy who has a chance to stand in front of these guards. Now, they want him not having a choice in that matter because Devontae was out. Got more Frankie. I said, the other thing they need to do in the second half is give us more T. Will. Now, it took them a minute, Brian, to get to Terrence Williams.
Yeah.
But when they finally did, T. Will made some winning plays.
Yeah. I mean, he gets the two putbacks, just absolutely massive plays. He hits a three. He calmly locks down a couple of free throws. I mean, Caleb Houston has a bagel in this game, right? And it kind of feels like at this point in his career, if he's missing a couple of his first shots, that he kind of goes in the tank. And I think we need to see more Terrence Williams because, you know, Williams got 14 minutes in this one and Caleb Houston got 32. So if we cut that down to 27, 25 when Houston is in kind of one of his funk games, then I think Michigan becomes a better team. I mean, you want to put Houston out there because he is a talented guy shooting 38% from three on the season, but he's so streaky right now that I think you might want to have a shorter leash for him and allow Williams to go do the kind of things that he did in this game.
All right, Seth?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and both of them, their defense kind of goes with their offense. It's like, I think it's just like how connected they are in the game is based off of how they're feeling it or something. But Houston, his defense came along during the season and really progressed. And Williams, I don't think, got that chance. But he was pretty locked in this game, too. One of the better defensive, still got blown by once or twice. But, like, he's not the greatest athlete. And it goes back to, I think it was last year, when someone asked Howard about Terrence Williams. He said, you know what, we're talking about starting him just because whenever we have scrimmages between these two teams, whichever team he is on is winning. And there's really no explanation other than, like, this guy, you know, he'll get in there, he'll ball out. He has moments where he just understands the game and is going to do something. Those putbacks came out of nowhere. And I went back and watched him again, and all they were is he sees the shot go up, he sees that there's a lane open, and he runs in there. And the way that Michigan shoots sometimes, especially because they're not great three-point shooters, but they get open threes more than most teams, that's a big opportunity for putbacks. And they're going to watch Dickinson down there, right? They're going to watch Diabate down there because they know who those guys are. There's an opportunity for someone from the wing to come in and have that kind of impact. We were hoping it was going to be Brandon Johns, and if it's Terrence Williams, yes, that unlocks offense that Michigan has not had this year.
I mean, he steps to the free throw line and makes a couple of, clutch free throws like he did against Ohio State. I mean, he is obviously, when you talk about being able to feed the post, he's one of their better guys at that. Clearly one of their better three-point shooters. We heard from Phil this morning. He said he doesn't know whether he's going to get the minutes at the three or the four. Fine. I don't care which one it is. Right? I really don't care which one it is. I feel like you got to be ready to give him more minutes if one of those guys. It could be Musa who isn't going. And I actually like him at the four. I think he does a good job of it. He could be really, really good in the high-low. When they go high-low, it's really Hunter at the top.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because Musa's not great at feeding the post. Well, now you could go high-low action with T-Will and Hunter, and you got T-Will who can hit the three and feed the post. He can actually guard bigger players. He is a heady guy. He can rebound for his size, too. Just the intangibles that he brings to the table are they're too obvious and too abundant to leave on the bench when one of those guys is struggling. If they're both rolling, Brian, if they're both rolling, let them both go. But if one of them is struggling, you can't give them 30 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And this has been kind of a frustration all season, right? Where Houston, there are some games where it's just like, it's not happening tonight. And you look at the box score, it's got 37 minutes. And it's like, at some point, you got to transition from, we need to build this guy up. We need to make sure this guy can get to the heights that his potential says he has, and say, we need to win this game right now. And I think the NCAA tournament is a good example of the latter.
I agree. Because Seth, I'm not in practice. I'm always very careful to really get into, you know, who should be playing without being in practice, without knowing all the dynamics that go into it. But I mean, you're watching the game, and you watch all the games, and you sort of see a pattern emerge over time where they do try to allow Caleb to shoot to get hot, right? You want to give Musa's athleticism a chance, even if it hasn't shown up as much as you would like it to. And again, they want to give it a chance to be present at the end of games. But to Brian's point, I mean, now it's if you lose, you go home. Like, there's no tomorrow, so you really don't have an opportunity to hope. I mean, if you got a chance to maybe stack the deck, which I think you can with T-Will, I think you got to take it.
And it's not just Houston's minutes, too. You know, it's probably not going to happen with Brandon Johns if you give him more minutes at this point. Like, and that's a lot of the same things that we were hoping to get from Johns is what T-Will has been showing you, right? He'll shoot the three. When he's got the opportunity, he'll put it up. He'll make his free throws. He will... he's got enough size to box guys out. And then, you know, talk about three versus four. I mean, Villanova doesn't matter because they got the same guy at the three and the four, right? Like, Jordan Samuels and Brandon Slater are the same dude, except for one of them is a little better defender and the other one makes more threes. But, I mean, that's what you're going to face in modern basketball is a lot of the same dudes. So those two positions are pretty much interchangeable in my mind. And the guys that Michigan has all lean towards the four. So, you know, look at where we're going to get minutes for T-Will, you know, they've been putting Johns out there before him. So, I mean, there's another spot where you can ask and see what this guy will give you. And, you know, the more he's making shots, the more he's involved in the offense, the more his defense seems to come around. When we've had bad T-Will games, it's because he kind of sleeps or he doesn't know where to be on defense. And I think that comes back to the fact he doesn't get that many minutes.
Yeah, I agree. And again, let me be clear. If your two freshmen are rolling, roll with them. If they aren't, if one of them isn't, man, you got to break glass in case of emergency. You just got to do it sooner. You got to do it sooner in the game. So here's what we're going to do, because we got to get into this Villanova matchup, right? So we'll take a break here. We'll try to get Craig Ross in, because I see him there. We're going to see if we can hear him in the break. And then we'll come back on the other side with more MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. The ticket.
Hey, Brian, I was sitting back on Tennessee because I thought you were going to make a comment about Josiah Jordan James and how basically Frankie just took him out of his entire game with, was it Huntley?
Viscovi. It was Viscovi.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Craig.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. I rebooted a couple times. I ended up with some sound eventually.
Okay, there you go.
So,
So I see.
I thought the Viscovi thing was really a key because in the Longwood game, he was 6 of 8 from three, and he's a 40% plus shooter. And I thought Eli and Terrence Williams really blanketed him for most of the game. He got 5 threes. He missed 4 of them. He had a couple terrible looks. Terrence was on him. He airballed 1 or 2. I thought the defense they did on Viscovi was as important as anything.
Yeah, they didn't leave him. He was the one guy that they say, okay, if you're going to give some airspace and do late closeouts on guy, he's the one guy that don't do that with. Like, stay sticky to him. But the other guys, if you got to give up something, I'd rather give them a cleaner look from three, and that wound up being a good plan. Hey, so look, speaking of Josiah James, look at Eric Tolbert showing up in the room saying Josiah James is one of his guys. You actually tried to get him to Michigan, Eric? You tried to get Josiah James to Michigan and didn't try to get Ja Morant to Michigan. I don't understand the logic here, Eric. I'm not getting it, man. Yeah, great that you knew Josiah James is AAU. I understand that. But this should have been, as Sheldon said, you're on shaky ground. The Ja Morant stuff. That is absolutely right. Josiah James. That does not make up for Ja Morant. Doesn't come close here.
In fairness to Eric there, I mean, a 3-and-D 3 would be kind of welcome on this team, I would say.
Yeah, but Ja Morant, come on.
He'd be in the NBA by this point anyway. He would not be helping the 21-22 Michigan Wolverines basketball team.
Yeah, Eric, hey man.
I would take James. I would take James in a heartbeat on this roster.
I hear you, but I'm just saying he's trying to make up for a real. Hey man, that's like cheating on your wife 100 times, and then say, honey, I was faithful this time. Like you just cheated 100 times. You let Ja Morant go, Eric. Come on, man. It's hard to make up for that, bro. Hard to make up for that. Anyway, this Villanova matchup, fellas, am I wrong to feel better about this matchup, even though, you know, they're a better coach team for sure?
Than Tennessee?
Tennessee.
I mean, I feel fairly positive about this. I'm not.
Really?
They're a real good team, but I don't see how they match up against Hunter at all.
I don't either.
Well, and they had trouble with the big guy at Creighton, who's 1/10 of Hunter, Calton, whatever his name is, Bryan.
And Edie went 9-12 in the Purdue game.
Right, Edie and killed them.
And their center can shoot, but he's averaging under 1 3-point attempt per game. Yeah. So I mean, they could try to have him bomb it from the outside, but like that would be a departure for them.
So we just gave Michigan the kiss of death.
No.
Yeah.
I all feel good.
Well, that's not,
we all
that's
felt pretty not, good about winning a 6-11 matchup. So
yeah, that happened. We all picked.
I'm not saying that Michigan's like going to be, should be favored or anything, but I feel like it's pretty close to coin flip.
It's a make their threes game. Villanova lives and dies at the arc. And they're going to take contested threes. And the point about Eric Dixon, he's the starter that comes off the court the most out of all their starters. And they don't replace him with another center. They don't really have another center.
Like this game,
they're going to have to unearth. What was the guy? I don't even remember the dude's name.
No, he's the
very bottom of Ken Pop.
No, Demir Crosby Roundtree had to medically retire because
So they've got nobody.
Yeah, so they've got their 6-man rotation. It's a Craig team. Yeah.
Hey, look at all these teams are 6-man rotations at this point.
But that sixth guy is like a smaller guard than the guards who are out there. So
hey, don't talk to me about 6-man in Villanova, man. I don't want to hear.
All right, guys.
That guy's pretty good too. I got some bad news.
The
on
ginger
that
is gone. There's no more ginger on this team.
Also, a great time to welcome into the discussion, Craig Ross. Craig, how you doing, man?
He remembers the bubonic plague.
Thanks. Yeah, hi, guys. Sorry for my screw-up. I can't figure out what I did, but in any event. Someone had flashed across the screen, and we got a note saying that we're the kiss of death. But I think we all picked Michigan to beat Colorado State. Last week, and I didn't hear any pessimism about Michigan, at least from us. It, even though in that first half, it's incredible, they were 24-0 down in 3-point shots. Colorado State had made 8, we had made none. And yet at halftime, it still felt like, particularly when Frankie made his 2 big plays to cut it from 15 to 10. It still felt like, oh yeah, Michigan was going to win this game. Even Barkley thought that at halftime. And so anyway, the oddity, and I don't know what you guys think about this, is that in both of these games, Michigan was well minus in possessions. We had 9 fewer possessions in Colorado State. We had 15 fewer possessions against Tennessee, which is just, you know.
The Colorado State thing was just now every single ball that rolled on the floor went back to them.
I'm not saying it wasn't random. I am saying it's, you know, those are games, particularly in a tournament, that, you feel good about winning.
Here's the deal. And you mentioned 15 turnovers in both of those games. I don't care how they came about. You get 15 turnovers against Villanova, Craig, you're going to lose this game, I think.
Yeah, Villanova is a great shooting team. They shoot, I think, just about more threes, at least as a percentage of total shots, as anyone in the country. They're right near the top.
They're 20th.
And they're a small team. They're well coached. The question is, can Michigan take advantage of the fact that they're soft or small in the center of the court? And Hunter's been playing really well. And I don't think they have a guy bigger than 6'7 or 6'8 at most to go up against him. And, Purdue beat them up in the middle of the court. And they had trouble with UConn, who had a couple big guys, Sanogo, who's not nearly as good as Hunter. And Providence had a big guy, I think his name is Nate Watson, that they had trouble with. So, that's where Michigan will have to win the game. That, and they're going to have to check Gillespie. Gillespie is good, probably a better shooter than the and a better player than the guy from Tennessee. He's shooting 42% on the season from three. So they're going to have to check him and make sure that he doesn't shoot it. But Villanova's got a lot of guys who can shoot the ball.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. I want to throw it over to you guys. I just want to respond to something because I said yesterday, yeah, he's a better player, Colin Gillespie, than the Tennessee guards. Better college player. I know he's not a better prospect than Kennedy Chandler. I don't need to be told that. What are you talking about? I don't need to be told that. I said that Kennedy Chandler is a better prospect right now. Colin Gillespie is a better player. At the same time, that distinction is why I feel like this is a better matchup for Devontae Jones. It's the prospect part of it you know, the speed and quickness of Kennedy Chandler that I thought was a really, really tough cover for Devontae Jones. I think he matches up better with Colin Gillespie, even though Colin Gillespie's a better player.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I might go with a lot of Frankie Collins in this game. Because if there's one person on this roster I have faith will be able to chase Colin Gillespie around, and he's like Sasha Stefanovic, right? Like, they run him elevator screens. They run him all kinds of stuff to get him open because he's really capable of shooting on a dead sprint. Almost half of his threes are unassisted. So this is a guy who pulls up. And so what Michigan needs is they need someone to be absolutely in his base. And there's one guy in this roster who I feel is well-equipped to do that. And I mean, start Devontae and see how that's going. But given what we've seen from Collins the past couple of games, he could be a really key factor defensively, even if he doesn't do anything on offense.
Yeah, it certainly is. It stands to reason that you will play him more than he was accustomed to playing before they got into the postseason. But they're going to play Devontae Jones.
I'm not saying they're not going to play Devontae Jones, but like if Gillespie starts off hot, like I'm not waiting too long to see what Frankie can do against him. Now,
Frankie's defense has really been a revelation in the last couple of games, in my opinion. And he's, you know, I was worried at least about what things might look like next year at point guard. Now I'm not. Mm-hmm. He's not going to shoot the ball. We know that. But he'll do everything else, I believe. And he's been phenomenal at fighting over the ball screens, fighting under the ball screens, fighting over the ball screens. He moves his feet incredibly quickly. He and maybe it's emblematic of the entire team. The entire team right now looks kind of like a top 10-ish team. And it didn't 2 months ago. And so you have to give the players and the coaches credit that they really have evolved, and one of the big evolutions has been, I think, Frankie's defense and his ability, as I think we said before, not that the game was too fast, but that he was somehow too fast for the game. Well, yeah. He was very, very much in control, I felt, in both of these games. In the Colorado State game, I thought he had the two key plays.
Yeah, who would do the better job of exploiting their advantage? Will it be Michigan with Hunter Dickinson and their just overall size in the front court, or will it be Villanova with Colin Gillespie, their outstanding free throw shooting and 3-point shooting with that, and what we have seen from Michigan at times struggling guarding the 3-point line? Will it be Villanova's advantage, Seth, or will it be Michigan's advantage that reigns supreme in this game?
It's not just Hunter Dickinson down low. It's Musa Diabate is going to have an advantage down low. They have no rim protection. So, like, you know, you go back to Frankie, he can get to the rim and get the ball up. And Devontae can too, right? But so, I mean, they're going to have – I'm not worried about Michigan scoring. Unless they're, like, missing their bunnies, Michigan's going to have their opportunities to score. Villanova, the way they play defense is they move their guys around quickly, and they steal a lot. They got a lot of, you know, long wings and –
They switch everything.
Yeah, they'll switch because that's what they are. Everybody's a guard. Even Eric Dixon, you know, he's a 6'8 guy. He's like more Brandon Johns than a real big. And that's the only big they have. When they bring in their sixth guy, he's another two guard. So, I mean, that's what Villanova is. They're going to be switching. They're going to be they're going to be trying to shoot over them. And I think it just comes down to Villanova's shooting percentage.
I just don't. I mean, you're going to switch and you're going to put Hunter Dickinson on the post against a 6'7 guy, a 6'4 guy. Like, this feels like pretty exploitable. Like, I don't know exactly what Villanova's game plan is going to be against Dickinson, but I don't see how they keep him under 30.
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to double down on him. I mean, they're going to bring another guy. They're going to force him to either try and go through the double team, or they're going to force him to kick it. Now, Hunter is a pretty good passer.
I mean, isn't Hunter just going to put him under the basket so that he doesn't even need a dribble to score? Like, that's kind of what
that's the idea. Hunter should be scoring. Yeah. Hunter should be looking to score through doubles. The last thing you want to do against this team is put the ball back to waist height. Play above them. And Villanova's going to play above us. They're going to shoot the ball. If they're hitting 30%, Michigan wins. If they're hitting 50%, Michigan loses. If they're hitting 40%, it's a game.
I mean, one thing that's interesting is that this Villanova team, they've got a lot of shooters, but they don't have more than like two guys who are like truly dangerous. Gillespie's dangerous, and then Caleb Daniels, who's their sixth man, who plays more than half their minutes because they're like a six-man rotation.
Yes.
Those are truly, truly dangerous shooters. Their center, Dixon, he's shooting 52% on the year, but that's on a total of 31 attempts, which is less than one per game. So the perimeter mismatch that we saw against Colorado State, I guess you could see that happen again, but it doesn't seem like something that they're comfortable with. And then Samuels, who's their starting four, is a 27% three-point shooter. So there is a guy on this team you can float off of, which has not been the case for previous Villanova teams. So
and the sixth guy, isn't he their top shooter percentage-wise?
Gillespie is, but he's right there at 40%. And so, I mean, you could make the case he's probably the sixth man of the year in the country because he's on a really good team and he's playing this well this many minutes. And then, yeah, you just can't put him on the free throw line ever.
Yeah, I didn't know this. It was Phil Martelli who said they're the best free throw shooting team of all time.
Yes. By a huge percentage, too. But that goes back to the fact that they're all guards, right? There's nobody there who's 6'9" who just has like a bad angle when he shoots a free throw. These guys are all built to shoot free throws. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to. This game is, you know, we're going to win on the twos and we're going to win, you know, in the paint, and they're going to shoot threes. I do think that they're pretty good three-point shooters if they're unguarded. What happens is Villanova ends up taking a lot of contested or semi-contested threes. And, I mean, the Big East itself is just a three-point shooting league. But, you know, Gillespie likes to take a lot of step backs. Justin Moore, the two-guarded starts, he takes a lot of step backs. So a lot of these guys, they're not, you know, just the shooters. They're not like the Ohio State dude who gets, you know, 80% of his points assisted. These guys are like 55% of their points are assisted. And I think that might suppress their shooting.
So if we rewind the tape, Craig, to last weekend, so Michigan makes the Sweet 16. Michigan women's basketball wins, and they eventually made the Sweet 16 on Monday. Wrestling is runner-up, and they have an individual national champ, Big Ten champion, Michigan women's gymnastics program, Big Ten champion, Michigan hockey program. And then Sunday, down goes Illinois, down goes Ohio State, down goes Michigan State. Down goes Wisconsin. This was like, it was euphoria. If you love Michigan, I don't know that it could get much better than last weekend.
Well, and you missed a couple. I mean, I think Michigan won the Big Ten in wrestling. And they did, and they finished, and they were second in the country in the national tournament. In tennis, men's tennis last week, or last 10 days, Michigan beat number one, number two, number six, and number 16, and lost one total match. That's sort of been under the radar, and people perhaps don't pay as much attention to tennis as other sports, but they are killing it in men's tennis. And also there, and I don't know her name, I think a woman golfer for Michigan has now won three of the first six big tournaments of the year in the country in golf. And so there, it's been a remarkable couple of weeks in Michigan sports.
And not so much in those other, as Hunter was so quick to mention in the press conference yesterday. Yeah, there are a lot of fan bases that were tap dancing on Michigan's grave toward the end of the regular season. And Hunter said, yeah, they're at the crib. Talking about, yeah, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Illinois. Who did I miss? Ohio State. A couple of those we expected, right? But will it ever get any – will the opportunity ever get any greater for Brad Underwood at Illinois than he's had the last couple of years? We already talked about Fran McCaffrey at Iowa. I mean, these seem like letdowns that are ominous for those fan bases moving forward to me.
Nobody seems to like playing for Brad Underwood. Illinois just underperforms because they fall asleep. There's no better way to say that. They are a white collar team.
Oh.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. So your brackets, guys, I don't know about you. I have Michigan advancing. I think we all have Michigan advancing, but the winner of the Arizona-Houston game, which unfortunately is who Michigan would have to face next, I had Arizona as my national champ when I did my practice at the very beginning. I think Houston can beat them. I think that the winner of that game is the favorite to take it all. My opinion. I'm curious what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michigan can win against Villanova. I'm fairly optimistic about that game, but yeah, getting to the Final Four would require Caleb Houston going 16 for 30 from three, probably. Michigan has number two and number three in KenPom overall left if they manage to get past Villanova, and both those teams do not have issues with size. So Arizona is enormous. Houston has a 6'11 guy who's very talented. So the mismatch that gives us hope for the Villanova game doesn't really seem to exist in a hypothetical Elite Eight matchup.
Coloco from Arizona killed us.
We already saw what happened in that game.
Now TCU took them right to the wire, right? They took them, and
oh my God, that was such a foul.
and then they're calling on TCU and fouling guys out in overtime, and you're like, what? And TCU is ranked one spot ahead of Michigan in KenPom. And I mean, the book on Arizona has been pretty simple. They get their assists out of the they're going to overwhelm you with size, then they get their assists by kicking it back out again and then coming back inside again. It's a very weird team. But their weakness all year is they're not a great defensive rebounding team. On the offensive glass, they'll bring it down, but they rebound almost as well defensively as they do offensively. And that's what TCU was doing, is they were just out-muscling them at the boards and winning those offensive rebounds and second chances. And, you know, Houston, they're a pretty good offensive rebounding team, so I think Houston could definitely do that. Can Michigan? We haven't seen it. We got, like, some guys we thought would be good at it, but, like, that's not really what their game has been this year. But, like, that seems to be the way to fight those guys. Is you have to win on the boards, get second chances, and keep up, because they're just going to overwhelm anybody down low. And Michigan doesn't have. I mean, we saw what happens when that looks like against Michigan. So yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping Houston beats them, because I think Houston's a little bit better matchup, but not much.
Yeah, I want to get a couple of words in on a couple of other sports real quick. I got to ask you guys. I mean, Big Ten is taking it on the chin for all those losses that we just talked about after getting nine teams in, right? But, man, the SEC, the SEC really, really taking it on the chin. I mean, Auburn was expected to be a real threat. Kentucky was expected to be a real threat. Tennessee expected to be a real threat. They're all out of there. What do you guys make of how the SEC is fair? Were they just overrated?
Charles Barkley talking like they were the best league in the country. I mean, the Big 12 is obviously the best league in the country. That was true before this started. But Barkley was sitting there talking about, like, oh, SEC, right? Like right at the beginning of this tournament. And oh man, they are hanging on by Arkansas's two slim wins over bad teams. That's all the SEC has now.
I mean, I was in Tuscaloosa with my friend Jerry, who's an Auburn fan, watching that Auburn game. And so I'm rooting for Auburn, which is an interesting experience. And I'm just like, at some point in the first half, I'm like, you guys don't really run much offense, do you? And he was like, no, we do not. So I think, I mean, I was reading, I think it was a Draft Express post on ESPN about various prospects. And there was a pick and roll that Kentucky was using, and there were two bigs in the paint, so the guy trying to pull up from the mid-range had four guys contest his shot. And one of the things that they said is that there are all these Kentucky players who get underdrafted after not performing at Kentucky. So, and then you have Rick Barnes at Tennessee. I think that it's just a coaching deficiency. The league doesn't have anybody who's really, I mean, they can recruit amazingly well, but they don't have anybody who's like good at doing offense.
They have Tom Crean. Like,
not anymore.
No.
So, yeah, Will Wade is emblematic of that league. It's just you roll the ball out, and sometimes when you face good, disciplined teams in the postseason, you get got.
Well, that ain't going to happen against Villanova, because we know they've got a coach.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
A coach. They might have the coach.
Yeah.
When it comes to college basketball. But I got to – let's segue this way, Craig. I feel like Michigan has a coach, one of the top coaches in the game on the women's basketball side of things. It's one of the reasons why I don't expect a letdown. I don't expect for Michigan to get in this game and have Nas have what happened to Nas or to Nelissa Smith for Baylor. What did she get? Like 11 shots total in that game? Yeah. I think she had 10 points. I don't think that's going to happen to Nas in this game. South Dakota did a great job against Nelissa Smith. I think Nas Hillman will fare better in this contest.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, for Michigan, the key is always, can they keep their turnovers down? You know, and when they do, they're fine. But they can also go crazy with turnover after turnover. In this game, it's the last game, it started out that way. I think they had four or five turnovers in the first few minutes of the game, but then they stabilized and they eventually took that game over. So Michigan handles the ball, they're going to win the game. Yeah. If they start turning it over like crazy, then another matter. We don't know.
Villanova also used up their once a week luck spell to get all those threes to go in and keep up with Michigan. So hopefully that affects the men's team too, that Villanova made all their three pointers for a while, and that was why they were sticking in that game. You're not going to stop her from getting her shots anyway, because she gets so many of them off of rebounds. I mean, that's what this team is built on. They get a ton of rebounds, and you know, when you got Brown playing the way that she's playing, I mean, she came back and fit right back in, right? Like, there was not maybe like a couple possessions it took her to get her legs under her again. So, I mean, that is a scary, scary team to play in the playoffs, because it's really hard to turn off. The way that they get offense is very repeatable against anybody.
Hey, so, I'm curious, are you guys rooting for Purdue?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, how come Michigan fans love Purdue? I love Purdue.
As Painter. How come, yeah, I like
Painter.
Yeah. Okay. I like Painter. And, like, you know, they had that great rivalry when Mo was around, and they had Isaac Haas, and just the post game press conferences from Painter. He's like, I don't know how you could possibly stop this team.
Yeah, I like Paint. I like Paint too. I think maybe that's it. Maybe that's why. Yeah. There isn't the same sort of animosity against that team, that program, that fan base that there is against other fan bases. Not like the animosity that Brian Cook has toward the NCAA for having regionals in Allentown, Pennsylvania. So I got to ask, I don't know where American International College is. Does Michigan have a regional ice advantage over American International College in Allentown, Brian?
I don't know where that is either.
It's in Paris, France.
Yeah, you type in American International and there's like 700 spread across the world. So I have no idea where it is. It doesn't really matter. I mean, the AIC has been in the tournament the last 3 years. They pulled off a 2-1 upset over number one overall seed St. Cloud State in 2019. So, I mean, they're not a joke, but getting the Atlantic Hockey qualifier is the best draw in the tournament. And yes, it's in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Yes, it should be at Yost, but it's not. So we'll just play the cards we've dealt. In the second round, they get either Quinnipiac or St. Cloud State. To me, St. Cloud State is the vastly preferable opponent, because Quinnipiac, they're like Notre Dame if they played in the ECAC, because their ability to prevent goals is astounding. They have two goalies with 940 and 950 goals against averages. I don't know if they've given up more than one goal in conference play more than a few times all year. So if we're talking about a single game elimination tournament, I don't want to play a team that gives up two chances a game. I want to play a team like St. Cloud that's much more talented offensively and gives up eight chances a game. So just the ability for them to shut everybody off is a little bit worrying. But we didn't get Notre Dame, we didn't get North Dakota, so you can't be upset about the draw. And hopefully they can get to the Frozen Four.
And Minnesota State did get both of those
according
guys.
According to Mark Lewis, it's in Springfield, Mass. Mark Lewis is part of our video stream, one of our viewers. I didn't know where it was, so I guess you don't need the regional advantage in this game, though, sounds like.
You shouldn't. I mean, I'm not trying to downplay a team that's been very successful at their level, but it is, I mean, it's not a 1-16 matchup in basketball. It's more like a 3-14, but that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean,
I kind of leaned to playing Quinnipiac. I know that their goalie, Parrots, is excellent, but I just think
St. Cloud has a lot, is a better team. They have more talent. I think I'd prefer Quinnipiac, but it shouldn't matter. If Michigan plays at their level and things aren't weird, they should make it to the Frozen Four, my opinion.
All right, fellas, that is our time. And so hopefully next week, right? Hopefully next week we're on and we're talking about Michigan on the men's side being in the Final Four. Hopefully we're talking about the women's side advancing, the men's side, hockey advancing as well. Hopefully it wins across the board for the maize and blue, right? For the rest of you, be sure to join me at Jim Brady's tonight. Our countdown to tip off starts at 5 p.m. We're going to be talking to former Michigan basketball players, analysis, insights, and more. And then, of course, we'll be watching the game on the largest HD screen in the area, Jim Brady's 222-inch HD TV. So come on down to our countdown to tip-off and watch party at Jim Brady's 209 South Main Street in downtown Ann Arbor starting at 5 p.m. Hope to see you there. That'll do it for us here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK and the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.